intermission.
No, it's halftime.
McDaniel will end it in style. Arkansas is in hog heaven. They've won their first ever national championship.
Still missing your free throws, Wes? Who cares? They don't show free throws in SportsCenter.
Here's Washington on the drive.
I don't know if he'll make any change, but I figure it's time for me to start playing ball.
And they do it in stunning fashion over the number two team in the country.
Fact is, I missed a shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
Cold describes the Arkansas Razorback men's basketball team, putting together one of the, to be honest, worst offensive performances in the history of Bud Walton Arena. I mean, we went into yesterday's game knowing full well that Arkansas is not what the stats line show. They're not an 81-point-per-game ball club. They hadn't reached 80 points in a good long time. And yesterday, obviously, didn't quite reach that mark, putting up just 51 points in a game that just looked like there was a lot of confusion, a lot of dead legs, a lot of missed shots, a lot of air balls. That was one thing Mike Anderson pointed out quite a bit. A lot of air balls yesterday, and only one Razorback showed up. Mason Jones dropping 30 of their 51 points. First of all, how do you lose a game where one of your starters gives you 30 points? I think if you were to look throughout the landscape of college basketball, there aren't a lot of games where a team loses when one of their stars scores 30 points or more for them. I mean, 20-point scorers in a loss, that happens. That happens a lot. 30-point scorers in a loss doesn't happen very much. But then again, how many 30-point scorers represent 59% of his team's offense, represent 12 of the 15 free throws that were made, 4 of the 6 three-pointers that were made, and 7 of the 15 field goals that were made? Arkansas shot 30% for the ball game yesterday, but it would be in the teens. If you take away Mason Jones's 7-for-13 performance, it was just dreadful. Although, it started out very well. I mean, you get the ball to Daniel Gafford early. He's able to put the ball through the hole. You got 6 points over the first 4 minutes, and then no field goals over the next 9 minutes. And it's what maybe was more amazing than anything else is that Arkansas was still in the game after going over 8 minutes without a point, over 9 minutes without a field goal. And if we were to say that Arkansas's win at Texas A&M, Ty Richardson, last Saturday was ugly, then I'm not quite sure how to describe yesterday's loss to Florida, because ugly wouldn't quite do it justice. Ugly in the sense of what? A couple of crossed eyes, some eyebrows that are out of position, a weird-looking hairdo, and some funky clothing. Very peculiar look. No, I mean, yesterday was probably uglier than Shrek. It might be the ugliest movie character of all time. It was a Shrek-like performance. If you truly are not as good as your best game, which for Arkansas this year is FIU, and you are not as bad as your worst game, which was yesterday, then we shouldn't see another performance like that for the rest of the season. But you can't help but be nervous now, because the wins you had closing out the non-conference portion, you had some shaky moments. And admittedly, a road win in the SEC, no matter who it is a nice accomplishment. It's a very difficult league to win on the road. Auburn's found that out. Mississippi State has already found that out, two of the higher-ranked teams that are talked about to be contenders for the Final Four. So a win at Texas A&M is still a good win, but that's a bad A&M club. Beat them by 3. Probably had more opportunities to beat them by more. And for a team that we were saying over the last couple of months, yes, they're young, there are going to be bumps in the road, there are going to be highs, there are going to be lows. I don't know if you can really chalk up yesterday to being a young team. It was just a team that looked dead, didn't look into it, but still had a chance at the end, which maybe says more about Florida than anything else.
Once again, Phil, free throws detrimental to this basketball team. Outside of Mason Jones, who only missed one on the night, the team went 3-for-13. 3 for 13. Mason Jones addressed that yesterday.
That's the difference right there. We miss 11 free throws. They only miss 4. We make half of them free throws. We win the game. It's just we work on them. We just got to knock them down. It's nothing the coach can do because we're in the game, so it's on us to make the free throws. So we just got to keep working on free throws, I guess. We got to focus more on it.
317th in college basketball in free throw percentage. If it holds up, if they stay around this, this will be the worst free throw shooting team that Mike Anderson has had in his tenure at Arkansas. They can't hit foul shots. If you can't hit probably the easiest shot in all of college basketball, national basketball, high school basketball, you're not going to win conference games. Because last year, Phil, we've addressed this several times, how many close games they had in conference play last year that they were able to pull out because of guys like Jalen Barford, Daryl Macon knocking down clutch free throws. Well, these guys can't hit free throws this year, and so you're not going to win the close games like you had a chance to last night.
But it's also a team that if you take Mason Jones away, they made 21.5% of their field goal attempts. And Daniel Gafford only takes 4 field goal attempts for the entire ball
game. How many take, Phil?
He took 4. That's it.
The lottery pick took 4 shots?
It's incredible. And he made 3 of them, so I can't fathom the thought of it for somebody that admittedly he's not going to be an offensive star at either this level or the next level, but a defensive
shots.
Star for certain. But you've got to be able to get him the ball. When he got the ball, he was able to create a little bit for himself on the inside, knocking down 3 of 4, got to the line 6 times. Gafford rebounded well, pulled down 12 boards, but just 9 points. Daniel Gafford should never be in single digits in points, and he should certainly have many more than just 4 field goal attempts. But where Gafford shot well, where Jones shot well, all the other shots on the outside just looked horrendous. I mean, you do have to question a little bit about some of the shots that were taken. Felt like there were some forced threes every once in a while. The Gabe Osaboyan, what's he doing? He should not be taking a 3-pointer the rest of the season. Desi Sills had the huge game against Texas A&M, 14 points off the bench. He had an 0-for, had more fouls than points. 3 fouls equaling his shot attempts in 18 minutes. The bench, which, as Mike Anderson will always tell you, is going to be tantamount for his teams, they scored nothing. Not a single point off the bench yesterday, outscored by Florida's bench 10-0. I mean, you can say they played well defensively, and that's true. Florida didn't ever get into a flow offensively, hit just 31% of their shots, and they also were held under their scoring average at 57 points, but Arkansas was not able, as they usually do, turn defense into offense. It just did nothing clicked yesterday at all, with the exception of Mason Jones. And it's as disappointing of a performance as I think you've seen in really the last 2-3 years for a Mike Anderson coach ball club, to see Florida coming in limping a little bit, their pride hurt after blowing a big second-half lead at home to South Carolina, getting walked off on a game-ending dunk, and yet Florida walks away knowing that they won a game that they probably shouldn't have won. If you're going to talk about it being a really ugly game both ways, it was ugly for Florida. But, hey, this is what we said after Saturday's game at A&M. All that matters is getting that dub, and something's got to stand out. And something more has to stand out than Mason Jones. Who is your next option? It's Isaiah Joe. And Joe was off yesterday, hitting on just 2 of 10 shots. He only attempted 1 2-pointer, 9 3-point attempts for Isaiah Joe. And I think you would give him the thought that the shot might come and go sometimes. But the last couple of games, just 11 points and 6 points, hasn't put up 20 since about a month ago against Texas San Antonio. Remember the questions we had going into the season, because we just didn't know a lot about this team. We knew that Daniel Gafford would be an offensive option and a defensive wizard, and we knew Adriel Bailey was there, and that there might be a little more offensively from Bailey. We knew Isaiah had a shot. Maybe we didn't realize how hot it could get, but then on the other hand, maybe we're not quite sure how cold it can get. Mason Jones answered the bell. Somebody else has to answer the bell and put up some points for this team, because 51 points in a home, 51 points in a road game is never going to cut it for Arkansas. They're not a race to 50 team. It felt like, you know, you see on the court, fastest 40. it felt like yesterday's game is all about being the fastest 240, and then you pick up a win if you get to 41st.
And make no mistake, Florida's a pretty good defensive team. They're actually 10th in the country in scoring defense. But Arkansas at home, now it would be different if this was in the O'Connell Center. They were on a road in a hostile environment as a young ball club. But this is at home, and I know you have probably a little jitters in your first SEC game at home. The stakes are a little bit higher. But you got to come out with a better performance, like unlike what you saw last night. And it was just weird to watch because they just, for whatever reason, couldn't get Daniel Gafford the ball. This needs to be an inside-out ball club where you can open up the three-point shooting. And he just didn't, not only did he not get many shots out last night, he didn't get many touches.
Now, wait a minute. I mean, he's the biggest guy on the court. How can you miss him? He's 6'10", 6'11", with the 7'4" wingspan. How can you not get him the ball, even if he's not going to be the one who takes the shot?
You got to run post screen, down screen. I mean, you have to find a way to get him touches because he just didn't get enough consistent touches last night. And when the lottery draft pick on your basketball team, it's not like you have the luxury of Coach K where you have several lottery draft picks. You have one guy right now that is a lottery draft pick, and that's Daniel Gafford. And if he's not getting touches to kind of spread the ball, get his juices flowing and everything, it's probably not going to end well. Now, they've had some games this season where his stats haven't jumped off the page at you by any means, but especially in SEC play, you can't avoid your best players. And it was just weird. And again, Florida is a pretty good defensive basketball team, but by no means should Daniel Gafford ever be in single digits, especially in shots. Like, some nights you're just going to be off and you're not going to hit double digits in points, but he should at least have 10 shots a game. Am I wrong to think that?
No, I agree with you on it. At least should get the ball. You feel like if he's on the floor, he should touch the ball on an offensive best possession at least once every possession, or if not every possession, once every two possessions, and then get him more touches after that. But isn't it interesting that the conversation we had after the victory against A&M is how well they played in the waning minutes without Daniel Gafford on the court?
Exactly.
And it was Mason Jones was hitting his shots.
Less Isaiah talent,
Joe
though.
Was hitting his shots. And Gabe Osaboyan was making all the plays on the inside. Admittedly, yes, less talent. But I know A&M is really not very good this year, and there were more expectations for Florida, but things have not worked out for them necessarily. That doesn't mean that it won't. They've got plenty of players on that team that have been used to winning and used to making the tournament all these years. But if you've already won a road game without Gafford on the court, and then he wasn't in foul trouble yesterday too much. It wasn't a matter of him not being on the court. If he's on the court, if he's there, you got to get him the ball.
Because
that's going to open things up for everybody else. Mm-hmm. But then again, you know, the set plays haven't necessarily always been the strength. If this is a team that turns defense into offense, you know, then the fast break didn't really get going either yesterday. It was everything. It was every aspect of offensive basketball that just seemed to break down. 2 points on the fast break, 21% shooting if you erase Mason Jones, the foul shooting problems that we've alluded to up and down. So now you're 10-4, 1-1 in the SEC. You did get a coveted road win, but already your first home game is a loss. Now, there have been other seasons where they've lost the home opener and still made it to the NCAA tournament.
Anderson is very good when his back's against the wall, Phil, for the most part.
Well, and how often would we say, theoretically, that his back has been up against the wall when it comes time for January to turn into February? Each year and we're not going to be the show that's calling for Mike's job or anything like
Hope
that.
Not.
But not now, and I mean you won't hear me say that in February or March either. But when things get louder amongst the fan base and amongst the callers on a lot of the other shows and on the message boards, when it looks like the season might start to fall apart a little bit, that's when Mike's teams always play well. I look to the years I spent doing UALR women's games under Joe Foley, and Joe would always say, in December you want your team to be playing well, but he wants that team playing their best basketball in the middle of February. And that's what his teams did. That's what Mike Anderson's teams have done as well. So who do they play in the middle of February? Well, they get some pretty good teams at Missouri, Mississippi State, at Auburn, A&M at home, at Kentucky. So, I mean, If they're playing their best basketball in the middle of February, they're going to come up with some impressive victories. Early January has not been all that impressive.
So you mentioned set plays a little bit while ago, and Tommy and John and Nick didn't like the set play that they had to try and tie the game when they were down by two. I didn't have a problem with it because you have Mason Jones, who is the hot hand at that point. He's coming off a little curl down screen. I can't remember if it was off Adriel Bailey or Daniel Gafford, but I thought it was a pretty good design play, him going to the rim, Mason Jones trying to get something to happen. If it wasn't there, he'd kick it out. And he didn't get a great shot off, but a lot of times in that situation, because the defense is playing so tight, it's hard to get a shot off. Did you have a problem? Some people had a problem with that. I honestly didn't have...
For all the games at the end, or even the end of the first you know, half,
exactly
where it's just, you know, get the ball to somebody and let them chunk up a three
exactly.
when you got 2 seconds
mm-hmm.
left. That was a real play that they drew up.
I thought it was a good play call he drew up, and he's not getting credit for that.
Put the shot up at the right time. You had the offensive rebound by Adriel Bailey, but, you know, an awkward try to stick it back from underneath the backboard. You know, you're hoping Daniel Gafford's the one that gets it at that point, and then almost anything can happen. But hey, obviously, the basketball wasn't falling where they wanted it to fall yesterday.
Nope, it was not. And speaking of Adriel Bailey, Phil, he has not made more than 2 shots in a game since December 5th.
Wow.
It's been over a month. And that's not asking a lot. Like, to make 3 shots in a basketball game for a starter, a guy that has kind of reeled in his shooting a little bit. But it's not asking, like, over the top or anything measures. That's, like, a pretty standard thing to be asking a role player. Hey, can you make 3 shots for me as long as the percentage is good? But a guy that was making shots down the stretch, once again, the Arkansas killer, Kayvon Allen. He didn't shoot well. He was 3 for 11, but 11 from 12 from the free throw line, including those two that put him up 4. And that guy just makes a living, Phil, on decimating the hearts of Razorback fans when he comes back to Bud Walton Arena.
Yep, 33 minutes, only turned it over twice. Florida turned it over only 12 times to Arkansas, 16. Kevon Allen, 18 points. And 6-1 is his record against Arkansas in his career. The one loss coming in St. Louis in the SEC tournament last year. So they were able to get him on a neutral court, but not at Exactech Arena in Gainesville and not at Bud Walton Arena in Fayetteville.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast. Follow the guys on Twitter at PhilElsonPXP and at Ty Sports Radio.
Beard ahead to Gafford. How about a windmill? Let's put a little exclamation point on it. The Hogs are moving on.
I feel like there should be a webpage out there that shows the portal, the famous portal that we're all talking about now. And I actually think there is a webpage out there. It's just a matter of finding it.
It's supposed to be for coaches access only. Bill, that's
coaches,
why.
All right. So maybe I can get Mike Nabors to let me in if he's got a password for it. I saw him, Brett McMurphy had tweeted, I think a while back, some of the names that he saw up there. This was when Kelly Bryant had announced that he was going to transfer away from Clemson, and of course he decided to go right here, right where I am, right here in Missouri. At Faro Field, which I understand is undergoing a $100 million renovation. And they get 1 year of Kelly Bryant. And they get another transfer that's coming here from TCU that's going to sit next season.
Yeah, Robinson. What's his? I think it's Sean Robinson in his first name. It's Robinson's his last name. He really wasn't that good at TCU, but he's got to sit out a year, and then he'll play the following year. So Taylor Powell's got some competition, former Fayetteville High School quarterback that's up
yeah,
there right now.
If you're Taylor Powell, you got to be thinking to yourself, really? I mean, come on now. I thought I might be next or third or fourth in line, but I guess not.
Guess not.
It looks like they've got things lined up for the next few years here in Columbia. So we know Jalen Hurts isn't going to come here. I think it's funny for the thought that some people have that he would even consider Arkansas.
Hey, he's plus 700 on BetDSI to come to Arkansas. So
you're saying there's a chance.
There's a chance. TCU's leading the list.
TCU leads the pack. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. That'd be a very interesting choice because going to the Big 12 makes sense. If you're going to be a quarterback that wants to show he can throw the ball, then, hey, the Big 12 is your place.
Yeah.
And it would make sense if he ends up at Oklahoma. Who knows if Oklahoma is necessarily looking to him.
Yeah, I'm curious where Lincoln Riley, if he's looking to transfer quarterback this offseason, or if he likes the guys he's got. But with TCU, Gary Patterson, you've got Andy Dalton in his background. You've got Trayvon Boykin, I mean, he's had a couple good ones down in Fort Worth, and they really just didn't have a guy this year, and they were down for that reason. So maybe Gary Patterson can sway him. And I think another reason, I just don't think Jalen Hurts is going to go to an SEC school, Phil. Like, Auburn's up there high on the list. How could you? I don't know how you could do that as a former Alabama quarterback to transfer to Auburn. I guess we've seen weirder things in college football. But I don't see him going to an SEC school.
Pretty sure, and I don't remember the name, but I remember seeing, it was either one school to the other, but a baseball player transferred from either Auburn or Alabama to the other one. And I always thought to myself, that comes off very, very weird.
But that's baseball, though. Like, is there really that rivalry in baseball?
Absolutely, yeah. They play three regular season games, and then they play at least one midweek game in the AA park in Montgomery that does not fit into the SEC standings, and they take that game very seriously.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not Iron Bowl, but it's still Alabama-Auburn. So, I mean, these kids are not going to – they're not going to view each other as,
friends.
Just good old-fashioned Alabamians who are going to get along.
But I look to it like Arkansas and Kentucky. When Arkansas travels to Kroger Field next year, I don't think Arkansas football players think Kentucky's a rival, but when it comes to basketball, that's – and I know it's not what it used to be, but that's a heightened rivalry. I don't think maybe I'm not close to the programs.
It's the in-state thing. I mean, it's an in-state thing,
that's
and
fair.
I think that works for basketball too, because I mean, they're two in-state schools. It's the same with Ole Miss and Mississippi State. They also do the same thing with baseball, by the way, where they'll play a game or two that don't count in the SEC standings, but they certainly count for a little bit of pride. So I always found that interesting. But I would agree. I would Jalen Hurts to Auburn. I would put him in a better chance to go to Arkansas than going to Auburn.
Yeah. So,
certainly, when you saw what happened with Jared Stidham this past year with Gus Malzahn, I don't know if that's the place you're going to make sure that the NFL scouts get a good hard look at you.
Who knows, man? But yeah, bet my bookie has Arkansas +700, TCU's either at +200 or +250, and then Auburn's right in the middle of that.
Well, where could you see Ty's story ending up if he does end up going through
a UCA
with a decision to transfer?
A smaller school like Cole Kelly, kind of he went to Southeastern Louisiana University. I see Ty's story going to a smaller school, whether it's in-state or not, I don't know. Kids from Charleston, I don't know if there's any football schools up here that would be interested in him, but that's...
My question is, does Ty know something that the rest of us don't know? Because if there's a transfer coming in, then who's he competing against? A bunch of freshmen, a sophomore who's going to be playing baseball, a sophomore in Jones, who I think Ty might actually beat out nonetheless as a senior. KJ Jefferson, we've talked about the thought of him maybe starting as a freshman, but I just don't think he walks into camp and gets the job. I think under the current structure in the quarterback room, Ty Story has a chance, probably more so than the other kids, to get a lot of playing time. But if a graduate transfer or another transfer comes in and is automatically able to play one season, then Ty Story, he might still compete for playing time. But let's be honest here. If you get a Shane Buechele coming in from Texas, and he does have 1 year left, correct?
Yeah, no, he is. I believe he has 2 years left. Don't hold me to that. I thought he had two, but I mean, he's a guy that threw for over 4,600 yards, 30 TDs at Texas. According to Richard, who we had on the Morning Rush this morning, he is not yet on the transfer portal, but BetDSI has him +200, the highest of any of his schools to go to Arkansas. So that's kind of interesting that Arkansas is in the pack there.
Maybe Ty Story was reading BetDSI and said, you know, they got him at the best odds going to Arkansas, then I got to get a place I can get some playing time.
Chad Morris did try to recruit him to SMU. He ended up choosing Texas, so maybe there's that connection there. And as we've seen, Chad Morris has had the ability to connect with kids, whether they've end up going to SMU or whether they're just in this upcoming recruiting class that's going to come to Arkansas. So we'll see if he can kind of, because they still need a grad transfer. Because I got raked against the Coles this morning, last night when I put it out on Twitter that I thought it was a major loss that Ty Story is in the transfer portal and probably going to transfer. Because if you look at it, no Cole Kelly, who a lot of people are happy about that. But you lost the guy that only started, the only one to start multiple games last year besides Cole. KJ could come in and suck for all we know. That's just the honest truth. Connor Nolan's going to be busy playing baseball. He's not getting those spring reps. No one thinks John Stephen Jones, Dalton Hyatt, Jack Lindsey is ever going to compete for the starting job. That's my point. Like, you need QB depth here. Even if it's not good QB depth, you still need some. And the fact is, he's the only guy that started multiple games that was still on the roster to the point yesterday. And now it's changed. Now he's probably gone.
There's a couple ways to look at it. One, I mean, Ty's been around 4 years. He's tough. I think we learned that about him this last year. A lot of leadership qualities that probably could help some of these younger kids out as they're trying to adjust to college life and figure out the playbook and figure out what it's like to be a real student athlete, different from high school. But then on the other hand, when you did watch the body of work from last year from Ty Story, that was definitely one of the main positions that the Hogs had a lack of production from. And that's one area where they've got to have major improvement to get better than the 2 wins for the 2019 season.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
What's blood running through Darryl Macon's veins? The Razorbacks win it 71-70.
Bill, I've never heard the word portal thrown around so much since the last time I watched the movie Stargate. And it just, more names keep popping on there. Tate Martell's on there now. Of course, Jalen Hurts, even an Arkansas Tide story. But portal was never a football term, but now it seems it's the most popular post-championship game term.
Well, two things. First off, I saw Ralph Russo lament this as well and say it should be referred to as a database, and I'm with Ralph. He's one of the best with the AP. Two, okay, in a joke, Stargate made me think of this. I had a roommate out of college, and I tried to watch Stargate at least 30 times, fell asleep every time. I used to joke that was better than a sleeping pill.
It's a good movie if you give it a little time. That I think you're right. You do have to have a little time before you realize what's happening, and when the aliens show up, and things do heat up a little bit. They did have a couple of sequels and I think a TV show. It's a good movie, but maybe it's not for everyone. It ain't Roadhouse, by the way, which I know you love.
Yeah. Well, I watched that last night. No, I mean, Stargate's a good movie. It's just, you got it, like you said, there's a point you got to punch through it to get through it. But I know you didn't have me on to talk movie reviews other than Roadhouse is awesome. And there's a lot of quarterbacks on the move, starting with Jalen Hurts.
That's right. So, I mean, the big question is, where does he go? And a lot of people think that there's nowhere in the SEC that he would go because it'd be too awkward for him leaving Alabama and playing for a team in the same league. I don't know if I think that's true. I've read a couple of places that think that maybe Tennessee would be a good landing spot for him. I know a lot of people look at Oklahoma. Where do you think is the best spot or the spot that's most probably going to get Jalen Hurts at quarterback?
Well, there are a couple layers, and I'm with you. I agree that the SEC thing doesn't bother me at all. I don't know that it will bother him. He has to do what's best for him. Would it make a splash on Twitter if he went to Tennessee or, you know, Arkansas or Auburn? Auburn would really make a splash. Yes, it would. He has to do what's best for him. Tennessee interests me a little bit. I think the Miami connection, because their quarterback play was so poor, and he has to go somewhere where he can prove it a little bit. And they've got receivers that can run, good athletes on the perimeter. Be an interesting fit down there with Manny Diaz. It'd be an interesting fit at Oklahoma because everything Lincoln Riley touches is pretty good, and now they have an opening with the Kyler Murray news.
Bill Bender, College Football for Sporting News. Bill, Shane Buechele is a guy that's kind of been tossed around amongst Arkansas message boards, but from all indications, he's not on the transfer portal yet. I know Bet DSI put out something that says he's most likely to end up at Arkansas if he were to move on. If he were to move on from Texas and Tom Herman, where do you think his destination would be?
You know, that would be a decent one. And, you know, transferring makes sense at this point in his career just because looks like Ellinger's the guy at Texas for the next couple of years. Arkansas's been in the market for some of these guys, whether it was Sam Ellinger Buechele, like you said. I mean, remember when Kelly Bryant's name was out there? Mm-hmm. That was a potential landing spot. Jalen Hurts on some level. And Brandon Wimbush will be another one. It'll be interesting to see where he lands. So we've got this, like, transfer quarterback shuffle. It's been the biggest story the last 3 days. But that's college football now, guys. which I don't know if it's better to play transfer roulette or develop your own. I guess there's a case to be made for both ways, knowing that, in this year's playoff, Murray was a transfer, Tagovailoa was a backup last year, Ian Book was a backup at the beginning of the year, and then Trevor Lawrence was a backup at the beginning of the year, and he's future number one pick.
Let me touch on a point that you made there, too, because Mike Anderson, Arkansas basketball coach, was asked yesterday about a player that has transferred out, a freshman named Jordan Phillips, and he was asked if he was surprised about it. He said, I'm not surprised about anything anymore. And I think he was referring specifically to players transferring out of his program. But this is something that you said, this is college football. This is college sports now, where players have a little bit more freedom than they've had in previous years. But the current structure, it's not going to last like this. Don't you get the sense there'll be a change in the rules of graduate transfers at the very least that change things from what's felt like a free agent craze this year?
Well, I think it's going to go the other way, honestly. I think there's going to be more and more transfers. I wouldn't be surprised if down the line they don't have to sit for a year. Now, that's a big one, though, because then it will feel like full-fledged free agency with guys coming and going. And, I think there is something to be said about making a commitment to a school, number one. And number two, you don't want, the second Jalen Hurts decides to transfer, are there going to be guys outside his, room in Alabama? So I think there's a fine line there. It's been discussed for a few years, but if anything, the way it's going, it seems like the NCAA is doing everything it can to make the rules more player-friendly, and my personal thought is they're doing that partially out of so they can dodge the pay-the-players discussion, which has been, less – every time we're talking about transfers, we're not talking about paying the athletes. That's just – I don't think it's a very big smokescreen, but it might be one.
I never thought of it that way, but that kind of thinking about it for a sec, that's not a bad assumption by any means, I think.
I tell you, I think he's right, too, that I don't remember that being all that huge of a topic this year, where in the past 2 years I've heard a lot more about paying players. Yeah. It's been more about transferring this year.
Bill, let's
but
go ahead.
It wasn't a bad thing, and the redshirt rule wasn't a bad thing to me either, although we didn't hear much about it at the end of the year. I mean, I know some guys came off the bench in bowl games. I guess the one that has me, I think, is a real kind of head-scratcher for them, and I know we're just coming out of the bowl season, is what do we do about players skipping games? Because guys were skipping New Year's Day 6 bowl games. It put a strain on them. I mean, Texas and Georgia was a little bit different without DeAndre Baker. And Will Greer didn't play. Michigan didn't have a bunch of key players against Florida. I don't know what they can do about it, though, other than try to make these bowls more enticing. And I honestly don't think expanding the playoffs is the answer to that either.
Bill, let's go back to the national championship game. You have Clemson dominating Alabama in almost every facet of the game. I kind of looked at, I can't remember what national guy I was listening to, but he was talking about how Saban didn't have one of his regular DCs. He didn't have a Jerby Pruitt. He didn't have a Kirby Smart. He didn't have a Kevin Steele back there with the defense. And he's had some studs there in the past. Do you think a lack of a true defensive coordinator hurt Alabama in that national title game?
Maybe a little. I think on one side you had Trevor Lawrence just really transcendent performance. I mean, they couldn't get off the field on third down. That was the big thing in that game. What was he, 10 of 11 or 10 of 12 on third down, 10 of 12 on third down, and just lights out in the game. And, three touchdown passes, 240 yards on third down. And there's something to be said about that. I mean, Kirby Smart and Mel Tucker, those guys were really good at it, right? And it was a difference maker for them. Now, I think the bigger issues were on the offensive side of the ball with the turnovers, the kind of conservative play calling on third down, and some head-scratching decisions, namely the one that Saban owned, and that was the fake field goal. So that's what happens sometimes with coordinator shuffles. Obviously, I know you guys probably aren't feeling too sorry for him. It's a first-world problem for Alabama. But it'll be interesting to see who they – Tua's going to have three different coordinators in 3 years, and they've had four different offensive coordinators in 4 seasons now.
And they just
lost
their O-line coach to Georgia Tech today, is what it's looking like, too.
Yeah, and when you have that, it's hard to have a player-coach relationship when you have a new guy every year. You've seen that at Michigan a little bit. You've seen it. Ohio State went through that with the guys before Ryan Day that are now down at Texas. I mean, continuity with a coaching staff, it can go either way. You can have the same guys, but, I mean, how many big-time programs are lucky enough to have Brent Venables, for example? Not many.
So let's move over to the conversation. Ty and I were talking about last segment, and it's the Kyler Murray thing. What a fascinating decision he has to make. And I guess so much of it has to go to risk-reward, you know, length of playing career, where you fall into the NFL draft, how much money you make from that. But that's what we're talking about. How much do you think for Kyler Murray, this decision, whether to honor the contract with the A's or enter the draft and start a football career, how much of this do you think is about what he enjoys first and foremost more than the other sport?
Well, that's what it needs to be. You know, our baseball writer and I went through it today, and you can see that at sportingnews.com. And so on the surface, I'll be perfectly honest with you guys. On the surface, I'm taking the football side of it for the article's purpose, and I'm thinking, as we're writing now, it's like, no, there's no way I'm winning this argument because, you know, baseball, long-term, the guaranteed money, all those kind of things, and length of career, I get it. But if he enjoys football more, I've been saying this all day when talking about Kyler Murray. I honestly don't know how good of a quarterback he'll be in the NFL, but I can tell you straight up that after watching him in Oklahoma this season, I want to find out. You know, I watched Michael Vick, and he didn't complete more than 60% of his passes, but only two seasons in his career, and he's one of the most exciting players I've ever seen. Kyler Murray could be a Russell Wilson. He's short, but all these young coaches getting hired in the NFL with college concepts, what better guy to have than a guy that I thought he played decent against Alabama once he got his feet under him.
It's much different than a conversation that you would have had in the 80s about Bo Jackson. I mean, he would not play for Tampa no matter what, so they didn't draft him, and he played baseball first. With Deion Sanders, you know, we all thought of him as a football player first and foremost, ends up going out to play baseball without being drafted. I think he was signed as a free agent. It wasn't that same conversation. This is a whole other thing. This is a kid who could end up being first round in the NFL, already first round in Major League Baseball. That's never happened before. That sets him apart in ways that the other guys weren't set apart. But you knew Bo Jackson, if he played in the NFL, he'd be great. You knew Deion Sanders, NFL, he was great. It's different with Kyler Murray. The question is, can he play in the NFL?
No, I think he can. I just don't know what the success level will be. I love that you brought up the Bo Jackson example because Ryan and I went through that. And so then it's just kind of the sports we cover. You know, Ryan said there was nothing better than seeing Bo Jackson in that baby blue Royals uniform climbing the wall at center field. And I said, yeah, except for that time he almost ran out of the kingdom with that silver and black uniform. So he was a once-in-a-generation athlete, and in some ways, Kyler Murray feels like that because it amps up the stakes that he was a quarterback. I mean, I remember Charlie Ward, but I would submit this, that here was kind of my argument. Charlie Ward, we all remember him as the Heisman Trophy-winning Florida State quarterback, great player, national champion, all those things. And I think the fact that he played point guard for the Knicks is almost the afterthought.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Again, it's a fascinating conversation. Can't wait to see how this all plays out. And it'll all play out over the next couple of months. But really, it sounds like Kyler may be making a decision on Sunday. Bill, you crushed it. It was a lot of fun talking with you. Let's do it again sometime.
Well, I'm going to go back on any show that tells me I'm right all the time. No, you guys are great. Thanks so much for having me. And let's get through this long off season together. I'll come on anytime. Appreciate it.
Winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.